Time, 7:30. By transcription, WHO present the address given by Adlai Stevenson earlier today at the airport dedication in Fort Dodge, Iowa. This broadcast is sponsored by the Democratic State Central Committee.
Well, give me that. Mr. Mayor, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to keep my hair on here this afternoon. I'm very much flattered to have an opportunity to participate in the dedication of this splendid new airfield, which is inevitably going to contribute so much to the commerce and the convenience this great section of the country. I'm delighted to meet here this afternoon for the first time in a long while. So many acquaintances and also an old friend, Senator Guy Gillette, who has contributed so much to the public life not only of this state but of our nation and for so many years. You know, the fact of the matter is, I don't feel altogether a stranger here this afternoon. I used to have a farm out further northwest than this. It's in the Missouri bottom, and it flooded every once in a while. The last time I went out to see it, in midsummer, wild ducks were flying out of the cornfield. So I sold that farm. What's more, my great-grandfather came out here to northwest of here 80 years ago and established the town and planted a great many trees. So I made a little inquiry the other day and I find that the town hasn't grown perceptibly since he was here 80 years ago. I came this afternoon not only to have this opportunity to greet you on this important day in the life of Fort Dodge, but also to talk to you a little bit about agriculture. My opponent has made two speeches on foreign policy during this campaign. Well, I, until this afternoon, have made but one. But I don't find him a hard man to catch up with. Because I think I can say more in one sentence about foreign policy than he can say in the whole campaign. And that sentence is that I stand on the Democratic record and on the Democratic platform. Now, my distinguished opponent can't stand on the Republican record on foreign policy, and he didn't even try to stand on the Republican platform. Instead, he jumped right on ours, and he did it in broad daylight. You know, we've been thinking of sending him a bill for rent. Because after all, the Republicans have a lot of money, as usual, and we don't, also as usual. When this campaign began, I hoped that agricultural policy would be discussed in its proper setting. Not as something to be thrown every 4 years on the chopping block of partisan strife. In its proper context, foreign policy deals with a good life on the land. And this means an efficient, effective, yes, and a prosperous agriculture. In this setting, agricultural policy is a matter of the gravest importance to our economic strength and also to our relations with other countries. There is a real clash of opinion about foreign policy in our country. The Republican Party has a point of view all of its own, but they don't generally talk about that during campaign. Instead, it has a Me Too candidate running on a Yes But platform and advised by a has-been staff. a staff largely composed of those Republicans who have opposed, who have obstructed, delayed, trimmed, shackled, and harassed progressive Democratic legislation for the past 20 years. The amusing thing about it is they can't even give themselves good advice, let alone the general. Now, not long ago, they led him to describe the progressive farm program adopted over the past 20 years as nonpartisan. And on another occasion, he referred to them as those programs which have been overwhelmingly supported by our party. Can you tie that? Of course, they can find, and I'm happy to say that there are, occasional enlightened Republicans who have voted for some of these programs. And in election year, these gentlemen are usually fattened up, curried lovingly, and trotted out in the farm belt with blue ribbons dangling from their halters. But my friends, that overwhelming support stuff that they seem to have fed to the eager general is a little wrong. Because instead of overwhelming support, the overwhelming opposition of the Republican Party has been thrown again and again, over and over, in one session of Congress after another, in one voting test after another, against these progressive Democratic farm programs. When I finished reading with his first speech on agriculture, I wondered if by any chance my name was Rip Van Winkle, and if I'd been dreaming for the past 20 years. In fact, I wondered whether I had been dreaming this year, when more than half of the Republicans in the House of Representatives voted against extending 90% price support. I also thought I remembered 4 years ago, when the Republican 80th Congress forbade the CCC to acquire storage facilities for grain. It turns out now that the Republicans didn't do this, according to the story that they gave the general. He said there was no shortage of storage space in 1948. Our memories, they tell us, are false. But my memory, my friends, is perfectly clear. And so is that of hundreds of thousands of corn and wheat producers who had to sell their grain below support prices because there wasn't enough storage space. Right here in Webster County, farmers had to pile their corn outdoors where they couldn't get loans. And when the general says otherwise, he is plainly the victim of his advisors, who incidentally think they can say anything they please and get away with it if you're a Republican. Now, if we may, let's examine a little more of the record of what the general calls the overwhelming support of our farm programs by the Republican Party. For my business is to see, if I can, that you don't forget the record. And besides, I own a farm myself. House Republicans voted against the original Agricultural Adjustment Act, nearly 2-1. They voted against the Soil Conservation and Domestic Allotment Act, 3-1. They voted against the AAA, which is still our basic price support legislation, 5-1. They voted against parity payments, 7-1 in 1939. They voted to kill crop insurance, 16-1. And against expanding rural electric power facilities, 3-1 in 1943. They voted to kill the farm ownership program, 8-1 in 1947. That same year, they voted to kill the agricultural conservation program, 12-1. In 1949, a majority of House Republicans voted against the rural telephone service program. They called it socialism and a threat to free enterprise, just what they said about REA years before. In 1949, they voted against price support on perishables, 40-1. In 1951, they voted against expanding rural electric power, 9-1. That same year, the Senate Republicans voted to cripple crop insurance, 2-1. And they also voted to cripple the conservation program. And yet, my friends, the general talks about overwhelming Republican support. You know, I've heard so many of these weird statements in the last few weeks that I've been thinking that I would make a proposal to the Republicans. I'd make a deal with them, that if they'd stop telling lies about us, we'd stop telling the truth about them. Now, let me add, and I don't cite that record merely to recall the past mistakes of the Republican leaders. They have been wrong so long and so many times that a purposeless recital of their voting record would be wanton cruelty. And what's more, I believe in repentance and in forgiveness. I cite the record not as it recalls the past, but as it reveals the future. One of the slogans they think will win the election that you're familiar with is, "It's time for a change." Change to what? They don't say. What would they change? They don't say. Change the job holders? Yes. And I also have a suspicion that one of the things they'd like to change is that voting record on agriculture. But just a 30-day change, my friend, a change between now and election, because the record shows that they have been voting against change for 20 years. While we are talking about change, let me remind you that the Democratic Party has helped the people work a real change, one of the most dramatic in our history. A friend told me about an experience of a man named Leo Martin, some of you may know, then a farmer near Dubuque. He's now sheriff of Dubuque County, who sent a carload of sheep to the Chicago stockyard in the Depression days, and they sold for a price which did not equal the shipping cost. So he was billed for $16, that is his loss after selling a carload of sheep. Leo Martin wrote back to them. He said, "I don't have the $18, but I've got some more sheep if you want." I tell you, there has been a change, all right. It began with the old corn loan program put into effect by the Democrats in 1933. The first loan made under this program was at Pocahontas, right here in the next county. And the very land on which we now stand here, I believe, this afternoon, where this splendid new airport is located, was being foreclosed in 1933 and was saved by the owner through the corn loan program. Now, my friend, I call this change when the farmer's income increases four times over what it was in 20 years ago, and that's what's happened. And in terms of what a bushel of corn or 100 pounds of pork will buy, in dollars, the increase has been tenfold. You see the results around you every day. Finer homes, greater comfort, more freedom to read and travel, a more secure and a better life. Consider what rural electrification alone has meant to country living. Democrats are proud of the accomplishments of the REA Cooperative, of the way you as customers and directors have seen this job through to a point where rural America is now 90% electrified. We Democrats are also proud of your soil conservation district. Certainly nothing is more important to our continued national strength than the preservation of our basic resource, which is the land. These districts are expanding our democratic institutions too, keeping alive the old American tradition that the way to solve a community problem is to get together with your neighbors. We have almost 2,500 of these soil conservation districts in the country, covering more than four-fifths of all of our farms. And what I like best about this program is that you, the farmers, assume the main responsibility for seeing that the job gets done instead of asking the government to do it for you. I just want to add that your farm credit co-ops are also managed by farmer-elected boards. And you know how your local PMA committeemen are chosen by secret nonpartisan balloting. I touch on the broad democratic space of these programs for a reason. I've watched these programs work at first hand in my own state of Illinois. I know they increase the freedom and the independence of farmers. I know they increase new opportunities and strengthen our democratic life. But I find the generals has evidently arrived at the contrary impression. To him, somehow, they are tainted with regimentation. I presume he has not had the opportunity that I have had to observe their growth and their great accomplishments during these past 20 years. He has picked up some strange ideas from the men around him, bitter obstructionists who oppose these programs in Congress and who seek now to divert attention from the record with faithless hollow warnings about I insisted regimentation and a sinister government in Washington. In short, the general has fallen victim to the same old oratory of the past 20 years, the oratory of the out always trying to get in that we've been hearing for so long. But you farmers, I'm sure, have not fallen victim to that oratory. You helped start these programs. You have voted for the farmer committees which administer, and you have voted for the party which sponsors. But even just keeping what we have doesn't seem to me enough. Our farm policies must be something more than set. They cannot be handed over to undertakers. They are living devices of free government, sensitive always to changing needs and new conditions. The work of free government is never finished. We have just begun the task of bringing rural telephone service up to present-day standards. We must find ways to bring low-income farmers into fuller participation in the economic life of the country. Price support will be debated in every Congress and changed in many if the experience of the past is a good guide. During the term of the next Congress, the next president, the choice between 80-90% support and the sliding scale of support must again be faced. And in this connection, farmers everywhere should be interested in a recent interview with Senator Taft, in which he says, and I quote him, he believes that General Eisenhower will be for a flexible farm support program after the present two-year agreement for 90% parity is over. And Senator Taft has, as you know, established himself as the greatest living authority on what General Eisenhower really thinks. And there is the challenge of finding a way to support perishable products. The Democratic platform pledges the party to continue its search for practical methods of supporting perishables. As we watch the price of hogs, the urgency of this problem becomes increasingly clear. I have no solution, no easy solution to all. I'm perfectly candid about it. But I do ask you this. On the basis of the record, which party can you trust to seek a fair solution? The Republican Party record on such unresolved issues is clear enough, but their campaign talk, it seems to me, is impossible to decipher. Their confusion began when they adopted a platform packed with vague and empty words for a program which they have consistently opposed, and with plenty of qualifying words scattered through it as loopholes. This is what they say. They aim at parity. That's the word they use, aim. And they favor a sound REA program, of course reserving the right to decide what is sound. When I practiced law, we looked for the jokers in contracts very often. And in this Republican farm platform, it's not a question of finding the loophole in the contract, it's a question of finding the contract in the loophole. And since their convention, they seem to have piled on even more confusion. Some time ago, my distinguished opponent told a group of farm editors that he was as much at sea in a farm group as they would be trying to plan an attack across the channel. Well, this admirable and engaging frankness has been replaced now by an effort to stuff the Republican voting record out of sight, and then the Republican platform, and now to beguile the farmer with confident talk about a Republican farm program that, if it looks like anything at all, looks like an exact facsimile of the Democratic platform. Perhaps it's due to the fact that instead of two Republican parties, that is the modern party and the ancient party, as in foreign affairs and almost everything else, there are at least three Republican parties when it comes to agricultural policy. One group seized control of the platform writers in Chicago and in vague words endorsed a sliding scale of price support. A second group produced the general's speech at Casson, Minnesota, a month ago. There he came out for 90% support, and also in plowing under the very plank which the Republican word jugglers had toiled so hard to create. And the third and most important group, or party, is the one that I have recently refreshed in your memory, the one that made the voting record in Congress. And it's the most important one, for it's the party of action and not of words. It's the one which has been silent until after the election. But last June, when Congress was in session, it was the boss, and a majority of the Republicans in the House voted against 90% support. Farmers may well ask, which of these Republican parties can we trust? The party that voted against 90% support in June, the one that came out half-heartedly for flexible support in the platform in July, or the party which wrote the general speech in September? I think the answer, of course, is that a two-headed elephant trying to go in three directions at the same time is not exactly a dependable animal. I ask you if you can trust a party that has voted consistently against your program. Can you trust a party that votes against them and now, for a few short weeks before the election, pretends to be for them? Can you trust a party with a clear record of obstruction and empty-handed when it comes to constructive ideas? Can you trust a party that cannot tell the difference between regimentation and local democratic neighborhood initiative? I don't believe America is going to entrust its future to the masters of a house divided against itself on foreign policy, on domestic policy, and perhaps, worst of all, on foreign policy. I ask these questions wherever I go, whether I'm talking about labor problems, inflation, cost of government, or our relations with other countries. And the answer must come from the whole citizen, the whole man. Nobody is just a farmer or just a farm woman or just a businessman dependent on farmers for his own prosperity or just a worker in a meatpacking plant. The fragmented man doesn't exist. He's a myth. I address these questions about which party you can trust to the whole man. Perhaps a farmer, yes, but also a father, a husband, an educator of his children, a man with some religious faith, devoted to his country, who prays for peace in this tormented world, and who thinks hard and long about matters which go far beyond his farm. If Republican leaders had truly accepted the farm program and had made a record of reasonable sincerity, we would have a better political campaign. We would talk more about other issues of deep interest to this whole man. And one of these is good government, decent, careful government. I am proud that the cost of government in my state of Illinois in relation to the income of its citizens is one of the lowest in the whole United States. And I am even prouder that commercial gambling is at its lowest point in Illinois, that our schools and our mental hospitals have been vastly improved, that we are reconstructing our immense and neglected highway system, that we have actually reduced the operating costs of most state departments in spite of wage increases and inflated costs, that we have reorganized and tightened up all along the line. I have learned, as governor of a great state, that to make government lean and efficient is a hard and a demanding job, but that it can be done. You can govern efficiently just as you can farm efficiently. And the better you do anything, the more fun, the more satisfaction there is in it. And this, by the way, reminds me that our friend here this afternoon, Herschel Lovman, the Democratic candidate for governor of Iowa, would like to. I think he'd like to work at governing better, too. And from what I know about him, he could do it, and I hope you give him the chance to do it. There are many other things I should like to mention to you here. I think we often forget, in these post-war years, the very decisive role that food and the people who produce has played and is bound to play in our efforts to reach a stable peace in this world. the ability of the American farmer to beat back the encroachment of hunger in our own land and to produce enough for foreign assistance in times of acute need is one of the great and the shining hopes of our free world. Our friends abroad know this, if we at home sometimes forget. I know some of you are wondering how your parents will manage when you have to go into the army. Some of you are laboring too, beyond your strength and your advanced years, because your boys are not at home. I will not give you any cheap promises that I can make everything right. I would deserve your contempt if I did. But I can say that our best chance for peace is strength, because we are dealing with people who understand only brute strength. And a strong and a healthy agriculture is the base of a strong and a healthy national economy. We will have to stand fast. My friends, we will have to work hard and face the ugly realities of our world, perhaps for years to come. And meanwhile, I hope and I pray that we will count our countless blessings. And need I add that one of those blessings is the Democratic Party. Well, I won't press that point. But we have had the people's confidence for a long time. Not by being perfect, because perfection is not given to human beings. And I am willing to concede, by the way, that we Democrats are human. I like to think that we have held your confidence because we have earned it. And that we have earned it in turn because we have kept faith with you, not alone as farmers, but as whole citizens, building our nation's strength and thereby building a lasting peace in the world. I'm deeply grateful to you for being so patient and for listening to me in this wind. I've had a good time. I'm touched by your courtesy and the numbers in which you come out to hear me in this inclement weather. I have little doubt that if you use your head, that the outcome on November 4th will be good for you and perhaps for me.
By transcription, you